honest, yes, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So Jim McGuinness is not involved in the Galway backroom team, lads. We can confirm this. So Pádraig Joyce was speaking this morning. Obviously, this news broke yesterday and we saw some hidden camera footage of Jim taking a Galway training session. Ironically, it could have been a person hiding up a tree, which Jim sent down to Kerry before the 2014 All-Ireland final. So a bit of irony there. Anyway, Pádraig Joyce was speaking this morning. And he said, he's a qualified professional performance coach, and I felt at the time we needed a kind of a mental aspect to the game to get a kind of a bit of extra bonus into the players. There's a lot more to training a team than going out on the pitch and just kicking points or just blocking and defending. There's a lot of aspects to it. Jim brought a different element yesterday, and the lads enjoyed the session as much as I did. This was my instinct when I saw it. First, Conan, is that we've all been a part of teams that have gotten somebody down to do a good session, which is, you know, an interesting session, just pretty much to break up the monotony of what's already there. It's a good idea. They don't impinge on what the game plan is. They just do a session from a different perspective.
And then they line you up to say, all right, lads, we're going to do the worst drill of all time. You hand pass to him and then go to the back of the queue. I'd say like a fresh voice more than anything is probably the best thing for that, because especially during lockdown, you've probably just had phone calls and Zoom sessions with Pádraig Joyce over the whole year. So having Jim McGuinness in, and Conor, you spoke before about him doing that drill with your club. I'm sure it's great intensity, and he probably talks really well during sessions as well. But I can just imagine his heartbreak when he saw that footage coming out, and I can see an interview of him now. Like, you know, well, to be honest with you, Colin, we felt that the group was compromised now, and I could be raging. He's just back in the GA 6 years later, and bang, footage straight out of it.
Yeah, I think he started that. Calling the panel the group, did he? Was that? I think that was McGuinness that started that. I actually hate calling your teammates the group. It's taken off. So, like, I mean, we did see the drill he was doing, Conor. Nothing too scientific about it. In actual fact, those type of drills have zero relevance to Gaelic football in any shape or form, because for anyone who hasn't seen it, we've all done it. Nobody listening to this that has togged out in a football session has not done the drill. And sometimes you'll do it kind of crisscross. You'll go across at an angle, you know, to really mix it up and confuse everybody. But you're basically two groups facing each other and you're sprinting past each other. And you're popping off a hand pass almost like you would in rugby. You know what I mean? In rugby, you're just popping it up in front of them. I'm sure McGuinness is shouting at them and making them concentrate, and there's a concentration element to it. But I'd say a lot of people were probably surprised at how basic a drill it is, considering it was Jim McGuinness doing it.
It's the first drill that anybody did. Probably did at their first underage training session. One line, you know, one line facing each other, and you go back and hand pass back and over. As Conan said, and I don't like to talk about this, but Jim McGuinness did take our club for a session years ago, and was the first drill. And I was reading his book, and he did the exact same thing with the Donegal senior team. So the whole purpose of it is, it's not. I don't like Jim McGuinness doesn't pretend that he's going to, you know, this isn't anything but a basic drill. The purpose of it is, he says at the start, you do it absolutely flat out at 100%. And if the Galway lads or the Donegal lads are like us, he stops it after 30 seconds and he says, lads, you weren't doing that at 100%. You need to up it by about 25%. So he gets a message in your head that this is going to be flat out, and you need to do better. If you think you're going to walk through this session, this isn't going to happen. So ties in with what Pádraig Joyce was saying, I imagine, about it's purely... McGuinness's role, I would imagine, is purely psychological. As you said, it's refreshing for somebody else to take a session. And then I think that whether it's once or whether it's, you know, a few more times that he calls them in, you know, before, you know, throughout the season, it's going to be purely what can McGuinness do to maybe just give them something different from a mental edge. And, like, you know, whatever about the drills that Jim McGuinness has done, like anyone that's listened to him, I'm sure anyone that's been trained with him, you know, trained with him or trained under him, can testify that, like, he does add a huge amount from a mental perspective. So listen, if that works for Galway, you know, whether it's one session yesterday or whether it's a few sessions between now and the end of the season, Pádraig Joyce is dead right to tap into that.
Michael Meehan was talking, I think it was on Morning Ireland this morning or some RT show, and he said that the strongest aspect of McGuinness could influence would be the defence and counter-attacking, based on the way his Donegal side played. And I saw other people tweeting about, geez, if Jim McGuinness can shore them up defensively and then you add Padraig Joyce's attacking game plan. I'm like, you can't do everything. Like, I mean, the way Jim McGuinness coached defending was strength in numbers. The way Padraig Joyce coaches defending is one-on-one and standing your man up, more old school. You cannot have Padraig Joyce's game plan mixed with Jim McGuinness's game plan. It's actually impossible, Conan. And anyone that says that hasn't a clue what they're talking about.
I completely agree. And I'd say that McGuinness wouldn't want any part of that as well, because if you think what he did with Donegal, he's basically spent 2 years with him, getting him to the point where they were the fittest team in Ireland and working through a system that they got better and better and better at. Like, yeah, you can't just give him six players and say, right, make them better defenders.
No, but just to pull you up on that, I'm sure like that wouldn't be Jim's philosophy, and I'm definitely not. But I would say McGuinness would be a talented enough coach that he could probably coach that way if Padraig Joyce asked him to do it.
Oh, like 100%. Like we spoke about this before. Like every time we mention Jim McGuinness as Donegal, the thing that people miss when all these copycat coaches do it is that was perfect for that Donegal team. He designed a system that perfectly suited each of those individuals, and it worked brilliantly. But like I'm saying, you can't just give him a group of players and say, right, away you go down there now and be a defensive coach. Like, he's not going to want to do that. He'll want to be part of the whole thing. Like I can't imagine Jim McGuinness being a Stephen Rochford, for example, and just coming in as an assistant coach or a defensive coach.
Yeah, himself and Padraig Joyce are obviously teammates. They both were down there in Tralee in 99 when I was there, and both of them were in there in 98 as well. So, like, I mean, they are friendly, and whether Jim would do him a turn, considering, you know, that it's only a couple of months, I don't think that would be the case anyways, because, like, I mean, what manager wants Jim McGuinness in taking all the credit for what you've done? Padraig Joyce has done as good a job. And we know, obviously, maybe Jim could change if a manager told him that's not what I want. But at the same time, Jim's 100% experience at intercounty level has been dropping around 13 players back inside the 45, waiting for a turnover, intensity, fitness, and then breaking at speed. It's absolutely not the way Galway are playing. So, you know, there's too many factors kind of pointing against McGuinness taking over to look after the Galway defence. The Galway defence is perfectly fine as far as I'm concerned. Connor.
Yeah, that really is. Like, and it's flourishing under the style that Padraig Joyce has imposed this year, you know, which is far different from what they would have played under, you know, under Kevin Welsh. And, you know, I was thinking that, like, if you know, McGuinness might nearly be the kind of natural successor to Paddy Talley and the role that Paddy Talley played under Kevin Welsh. But you made the good point there that the style that McGuinness had with Donegal doesn't align with the one that Padraig Joyce has imposed for Galway since, which is moving the ball as quickly as possible and with the foot. And it's not about getting numbers, you know, as if forwards drift back, it's because they're following their men, but they're not naturally getting behind the ball, let's say, in the manner that McGuinness's would. So as you said, I think it's just they know each other well. I think Joyce elaborated on that. They said they're still well in touch. They're still in touch regularly. So listen, if it was just a case for, he might get him in for a session or two or anything like that. But the prospect of him becoming, you know, involved in the backroom team on a longer basis than that, I don't think is going to be a thing.
Yeah, me neither. So in other news, Fermanagh have been forced to play the Clare match. We were talking about this last Thursday. They've 10 players positive. And they still have to go down to Clare now. They won't have trained before it. And I don't know, Conan. Like, I mean, it just seems very, very harsh. Ryan McManaman says, I know Croke Park have said we haven't put it in officially that we want to postpone. You can probably tell them that good things come to those who wait. So they are going to officially ask for it to be postponed. It is coming. Croke Park know our concerns. The GPA have now put forward our concerns. In fairness, from what we've been told, Clare spoke very passionately on our behalf for the game to be postponed. Colm Collins has come out and he said he actually wanted to play the game midweek at a neutral venue, more or less to give us the chance. So, I don't know, Conan, it doesn't seem fair that this game is going ahead. I understand the very tight schedule. There's too much riding on this game, really, for Fermanagh to give them some sort of a chance. Colm Collins is open to the idea of maybe playing it at some other time. There's a lot of the Fermanagh lads sick. How long is their quarantine, 14 days, you know, going to be up? Some of them, it will be up. Others, it won't. They'll just be going out on the field in Clare, having not trained together, you know, for the previous 2 weeks. And they'd be pretty much sitting ducks for a hammering, you'd imagine.
Yeah. And like, we say 14 days quarantine, like we don't know what Ireland will be like in 14 days time or what Fermanagh will be like. They might have more cases at that stage. So it's, I can sympathize with the GAA as well. Like in 14 days time, the championship is supposed to be starting. So, none of this is ideal. And it probably comes back to the casual and close contacts question. It's like if they're training outdoors, not sitting in change rooms together, not traveling in games together, and they're doing everything right, then they shouldn't be considered close contact, so the rest of the players can continue on. Like
the rest of the panel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like I know they're being ripped apart, but I'd feel less comfortable about the team being thrown out of the championship or the league, you know, rather than a few players missing out and just probably like maybe the only solution, and this is probably a bit too extreme, is to stop relegation the way like Dublin did it this year. I still think promotion should happen, have more teams being relegated next year. But if you do think it's too harsh, like I don't think we can stop the league. Like the show does have to go on if we want to get it done. But
yeah, the problem with that though is the Tailteann Cup. Like I mean, the league positions this year are going to decide it, which makes it even more unfair, really, on Fermanagh that they could be lumped into the Tailteann Cup next year, in 2021, based on this year's league standings. Do you know if they cancel that, they're cancelling the Tailteann Cup?
Yeah, well, like that, maybe that wouldn't be the worst idea, will it? Get rid of the Tailteann Cup. Yeah, no, I agree. So it probably is too.
It is messy. It's definitely, there's no doubt it's messy. Darren O'Sullivan was tweeting saying, I definitely wouldn't be comfortable playing against a team with a positive case, let alone multiple cases. But you'd imagine the positive cases won't be playing. Like the positive cases won't be playing at that stage, right?
Exactly. And like, sure, he can't tell that the people who are playing like are completely free of the virus, or they might be asymptomatic, or they might not have been tested. You know, you are running at risk by playing anyway. Like, you know, when he's as much at risk if he's playing against these players as the other boys who are casual contact with positive cases. So I can understand his frustration, but like maybe you just don't play if that's the case and nobody's going to blame you for it.
Yeah, there is no doubt. Darren O'Sullivan said in his tweet, things are about to get very messy. And I would agree with that, Connor. Like, and I think we all need to be prepared for this year's championship. This year's championship is not going to be like any championship we've ever seen. Teams will pull out. Teams will line out in a provincial final with half their team. Like I think everybody listening has to prepare themselves mentally and not have an outrage every time this happens. This is the reality of where we are right now.
I really think so, especially with the way we're going, especially in the last few weeks. And just before we started recording here, just to like another player in the Irish football team tested positive as well. And you can see how much of a mess that's been in the last few days. So like that's what people have to be prepared for. Like the way I'm thinking at the moment is, the GAA, and like you can't really blame them as well given the schedule, but the GAA, you know, people are asking the GAA to do something about it, but I think at the moment they're prepared to, you know, if Fermanagh are going to be the only ones, and it's probably not going to be a case they're going to be the only ones, because if they want some form of championship to go ahead, and if they're going to make, you know, if they're going to make arrangements for this game, then they're going to have to make arrangements for other games when it comes further down the tracks, when there's other counties that have, you know, multiple cases and stuff like that. So it's just really messy. I feel so sorry for Fermanagh, and like I just have to say, like, as well, fair play to Colin Collins, you know, for offering up that sort of alternative, because it's not as if like Clare are in serious trouble as well. If Clare lose that game, they face being relegated too. So like they could probably sit back quietly and just maybe hope that they're going to play against a Fermanagh team that's struggling badly, or hope that something might be done. But they've been willing to offer an alternative. So it was really positive to hear that come from Colin Collins.
Yeah, well, to make matters worse for Fermanagh, and like, I mean, Clare might be in relegation trouble, but they have had some very good news. Gary Brennan and Jamie Malone are back in the squad, just to really rub it in with Fermanagh. Not only have half their team out sick, they now have to play Clare with their two best players, which wouldn't have been there back in March or whenever it was supposed to be. So like, I mean, that's definitely kicking Fermanagh when they're down. Fergal McGill was talking, I think this could have been RTE Sport, and he's talking about what we're talking about here. He said, it's very probable that if a county is unable to fulfil a game, that we'll just have to plough on ahead. We're very anxious to get 2020 competitions completed in the 2020 year. That may not be possible, but at the moment, we think it will be possible. Again, everybody listening, just prepare yourself mentally. It might be your county. It might be another county. It might be Dublin, or it might be Tipperary, you know, like, I mean, defending all Ireland champions, and they might have to go out. And like, there is going to be an asterisk beside the All-Ireland winners at the end of this year, Conan. I don't think anyone is in any doubt about that.
Yeah, I don't like that Fergal McGill saying about ploughing on, like without teams. I don't think that should be the case. And I get that they want to finish it all in this calendar year, but I still think they shouldn't be holding themselves to ransom with that. Like, They should have known when you're starting a championship in November in a pandemic, there's a chance that it might get kicked on a bit, like, and then realize that 2021 won't be a perfect season again, especially considering the thing will still be going on. So I just don't like the idea of any team being thrown out of it. Like, it's not going to be ideal, as I said, with those teams playing with weakened squads. But yeah, like, that's the best way, and I'd rather that happen than a team being thrown out.
That's what's going to happen. Like, I mean, the team will fulfil it. You could be just down seven of your best players. And, you know, that's why there might be an asterisk beside. It depends who wins it. Like, I mean, it definitely, if Tipperary and Dublin win it, we'll say, ah, well, look, that would have happened in a normal year anyways. They're defending All-Ireland champions. I see the GAA and the GPA, they've been in discussions. They're talking about reduced mileage rates for intercounty players. So it's back down to 50 cent a mile. That's what it was when I was playing. It had gone up to 65 cent a mile. So the GAA are trying to save on mileage, which is fair enough considering the financial predicament that they're in. The GAA wanted to drop it down to 45 cent a mile for the first 100 miles and 30 cent thereafter. But the GPA have dug in, and they have, you know, they've definitely got a good deal for their members. They've been in a great, they've been also talking about their contract together. This is the GAA and the GPN. This has been in negotiations for months and months, and it hasn't been agreed. And I'd be interested to see the agreement now, because the landscape has changed massively considering the GPA were kind of digging in, looking for more money off the GAA. I would say, Conan, the GPA would be lucky to be around in the next 3 or 4 years, considering the GAA won't be able to afford to give them all the money that they've given them. Their commercial income is nowhere near it used to be before they became dependent on the GAA's money. And I would say the GPA are in a perilous position at the moment.
Probably. And considering, like, those wages that were coming out and stuff when Colin Murrurk was reporting them, like, it's obviously a lot of money that's been spent on just manpower alone. But the GPA, even with that position that they're in, managed to get a good deal here, I think. And
yeah,
when you consider that all those players are probably going to be traveling alone to games, like, it's a lot more mileage. The GAA could end up spending more money on mileage, like, you know, with all these players traveling around the country to games, not just training. So I think the GPA have played a blinder in this case, but you're right. I don't know what their future is going to look like.
Well, that's it. Their contract ended last year, and they've been negotiating it for pretty much all this year. So I think the negotiations are about to end. So we'll see that. Yeah, well, that's true. A lot of teams now hiring two buses, Connor. But, like, the safest thing to do is for players just to drive to matches, isn't it? Like, I mean, I know you're splitting buses into two, but Jesus, if you'd be close contacts on a bus, unless maybe you're able to split out to one seat on your own. But at the same time, if somebody coughs on that bus, you could be in a bit of bother. It's the safer thing not to just let everybody drive to these matches and not have half your squad that were travelling on one bus being compromised, because you will have a game the following weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose you have to think as well that, like, players will have to drive to get to the bus anyway. You know, like, they'll have to drive from somewhere to get to the bus. So if they're in the cars as well, and if they're on their own, like, for safety reasons, I know, like, Neffet back in August were big on, you know, close contacts traveling in cars together and stuff like that. So if people are traveling individually on their own, just makes sense to let them keep going that way, I suppose. Like, you were the first person I thought of, Wooly, when it said that it was people who were traveling individually in their cars, because that puts an end to the practice when, you know, players used to be carpooling but pretending they were driving by themselves to training and keeping the money for themselves.
So. Oh, exactly. I think maybe 1,000 to 1,200 per month I was getting tax-free money out of that little scam that we had going, all meeting up in Dublin and coming down together. Geez, that was great. Great times. David Clifford has been talking about the captaincy. Listen, we know, everybody listening knows my love for David Clifford, but it's not really his fault. But it's just a little pet peeve I have about captaincy within the GAA. And he says, there's not a whole pile to it when asked about the captaincy. He says, captaincy this year has amounted to be the administrator of the players' WhatsApp group. That's about it. And then he continues on. He says, there's plenty of players in the Kerry dressing room have been around a lot longer than me, so I leave them to it. It's a massive honour and it's something I'm proud of, but it's not changed my responsibility too much. And again, this is what stuff I give out about Conor. Like, I mean, you pick a captain for a reason. A captain shouldn't be forced on you. David Clifford, not a whole pile to it. I just leave the leaders to it. A captain is supposed to be the leader. He's supposed to drive the squad. He's supposed to take that responsibility massively seriously. He's supposed to be the right person for the job. He's supposed to be a conduit between the panel and the management. You know, and there's so many, it's so important, importance I would put on picking a captain. And David Clifford's ad is not a whole pile too. It's not really much. I'm obviously proud of it. It's just not right. And then you look at it on the flip side, and is Kilkenny still persisting with this old tradition? And Kerry, and they're the two leaders on the roll of honour in All Ireland. So I don't know what to think.
It's strange. Like, yeah, that's a good point you make. It's hard to argue with Kilkenny and Kerry, but like, it's not the best way to pick a captain.
Can't be.
A captain's role is really important, as you say. It's more than what David Clifford thinks it is. But that's the beauty of David Clifford as well. He just doesn't seem to care about anything but putting the ball in the back of the net and over the bar. And, like, on one hand, it doesn't really matter as much because, like, you know, I think on the training pitch and in the WhatsApp group even and the changing rooms, like, these leaders sort of emerge themselves and people follow them naturally because they are their leaders. Like, they've emerged through the group like a jungle almost. And but on the other hand, like, yeah, you're right. All that stuff you mentioned that a captain has to do, even especially during lockdown, even checking in on boys, keeping morale up just to see if they're doing their training, things like that. That's what a good captain will be doing, checking in on the last member of the squad. And as you say, being the link man between the manager and the team. So it's a strange one, but I still think there'll be enough leaders there that they'll end up just following the right men anyway.
Yeah. Some captains go above and beyond, like Conor. Like, I mean, they would almost take, you know, a role, not being in the backroom team, but like texting you to see, is everything all right? If they see you at training, you know, not going well, all those kind of things that you would think a manager should do. A good captain can do all that stuff, and he can be relaying it to management. I put a huge importance on captaincy.
I just wonder, like, in these counties, would Kerry and Kilkenny, that they probably have these leadership groups, maybe, you know, like that.
See, I don't like those leadership groups. Liam Kearns had one of them. That creates an us and them feeling within a squad, as far as I'm concerned. I used to resent that leaders group, if I'm being honest.
No, and there would be plenty. I'm just trying to kind of envisage a situation where, like, if David Clifford doesn't say that there's a whole pile to it, like, there is. Like, I'm just going back to, we talked about Desi Keneally last week, for example, for Mike Cullen, and as a 22-year-old, how much of an inspiration he was. And there's a lot, as you said, there can be a lot to, depending on who inhabits the role, there can be a lot to the captaincy. So, but whether it's a case that in Kerry, that Peter Keane, for example, knows that David Clifford, the way that he's going to be a leader, is what he does, is people are going to get inspiration off David Clifford from what he does on the pitch, whether it's winning dirty ball, whether it's like kicking massive scores, or just, you know, even seeing somebody like David Clifford working really hard, and then they're like, yeah, well, he's the captain, we can kind of get behind that. So, like, I imagine that, like, in group like that, in Kerry and Kilkenny, that, like, I would have thought with David Clifford, for example, that, like, you don't necessarily, maybe he is that type of character, but I would have thought you kind of want to absolve him from that sort of responsibility, that he has enough kind of, he has enough pressure on him, being marked by the best, you know, defenders around, pressure to score, you know, an amount every game and stuff like that. So that, like, the kind of the admin or the off-field matters, that you kind of absolve them of that as much as possible. So as Colin said, like, well, as Clifford said himself, maybe it's just the case that, like, the leaders in the Kerry dressing room and the Kilkenny dressing room realise that they are leaders, and they're happy to take the onus off Clifford in those regards.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Eddie Brennan has been talking about pre-season. He also was talking that, he said that if this was his first year with Leash, he'd have pulled out. It's just that it went so well last year that he kind of feels a responsibility to the squad. I thought that was funny. Like, if I took a team over this year, I'd be like, lads, so notice I'm out of here. This is ridiculous. I know. What would you be doing? Like, I mean, it's what a waste of your life, of a year, you know, for anyways. So respect to everyone who hasn't thrown in the towel, like I might have had. So he's talking about pre-season and pre-season training, and he says he's talking about this year and restrictions and lockdowns, whatever. He says it's forced our hands into realizing that we don't need 3 months of pre-season and Leash lads running around Haywood in the freezing cold with sheets of rain falling down on them. A ratio of training to matches is way too high. And because of that, then you're not seeing lads going flat out for that 15-year career anymore. Lads are putting so much into a short period of time, 6 or 7 years, the attraction or the grow goes. Here's my theory on 3 month pre-seasons. how about you just don't do them? Do you know what I mean? This is like in any normal year. How about you don't do them? And just because your neighbours are doing them doesn't mean you have to do them. Like, I mean, there's a responsibility on every single inter-county manager to not do that and not have the year dragged out way longer than it should be. And how can professional soccer players have their pre-season? How long do they have that, Conan? You're more into that than me. 4 to 6 weeks along with games and stuff. I know they're professionals, but if you can't get physically fit training 3 times a week for 6 weeks, what on earth are you doing?
That's it, but it's just, it's hard, like, because somebody, a new manager will come into a group and they'll look to start earlier, and then another manager will come in and look to start earlier. And, like, I think Eddie Brennan was talking about, you know, shortening the season and making a club split, club and county split, but, like, I don't think that would stop the window of county training. Like, I think people...
It might not, no.
Yeah, I think he would still be training, because he's talking about the ratio of matches to training. I think it would actually go way up then if you had that amount of time without playing games. People will still be training away.
Well, no, you'd have the club season running solidly August, September, probably October, and county teams would have too many players involved in that. You know, maybe they would go back in November or December.
Yeah, like that's not a bad point, but as soon as you're out of the club season, like you're into pre-season with the county, and I don't know, I just can't. It's hard to sort of unknow what you know. Do you know what I mean? It's like people know if you train longer and for harder, you'll get fitter. So people will start doing that naturally, and then once you hear that one team has gotten an advantage, then everybody else starts doing it, and it's just always hard to roll back from that.
Yeah, no, look, in fairness, it is, and the one thing that a lot of managers hide behind, and I've heard them doing it, they brag about, look how many training sessions we've done, lads. Look, this is what commitment you've given, and it could be off the charts, Connor, how many training sessions you've done since the previous October. They're using this maybe as a way of giving you some sort of confidence in your fitness.
They can always nearly cite a date that they, you know, they, oh, we went back on November 1st and we did, as you said, we did 25 sessions or in November or something like that. Or I'll remember when we were running through the shit in November and all this sort of stuff. And it's used as, and that stuff filters out. And especially in a copycat culture like the GAA, and then they're just like, oh, these boys have been at it since, you know, November or October or something like that. And you think, Jesus, if I'm not doing it, you know, you nearly get worried. Whereas this season will show you that I'm just glad to hear that everyone's speaking the same language, and that's even somebody as, you know, as experienced as Eddie Brennan. Like, I thought it might be just me as an older player this year that, like, I was just delighted we had very little of a preseason, you know, because of the circumstances that were imposed upon us, you know, 3 to 4 weeks, and then it's games. And I was like, geez, I could go for this all the time, as opposed to starting at the, you know, starting in the winter and then having your season go on for that long. So, but that's, I know, like, it's just, as Eddie Brennan, I think, was saying, like, circumstances have come upon us, and now the GAA need to act and kind of act, you know, make sure that this system kind of stays in place for longer. But, like, I don't know, when Conan says it's so hard to unknow what you know. And then when people start back training earlier again, another county's going to do it, another county's going to do it. And it's a vicious circle, and just hopefully it doesn't return.
Definitely. Niall Kelly's out for 6 months, lads. Some terrible news for him. Obviously, a tie won the county final. He went off injured. Didn't think too much of it at the time, but he ruptured his Achilles tendon. So I hadn't heard this before. So he said, I actually thought that someone had kicked me in the back of the leg. The specialist was saying it's a common reaction. You look behind to see who hit you. And that's exactly what happened to me. So when I saw there was no one behind me, I was like, oh, Jesus, this could be bad. I'd never heard that before, Conan, that if you do your Achilles, it's like somebody's kicked you in the back. You turn around to go, here, what's your problem? And there's actually nobody there.
Yeah, I think the real life sniper, you know, when you're getting kicked in the back of it. Yeah, it sounds terrible. Actually, one of my club mates suffered it this year, and like, he's bedridden for a while, and he's out of work, and terrible, terrible injury, and like, just can't walk. Like, need to learn how to walk again on that foot. So, heart goes out to Niall, and he obviously had to come off during that club championship final. Big loss for Kildare.
He is a loss for Kildare this year, because it's obvious that Jack O'Connor fancied him. He'd been away travelling, and he'd been in and out of the team the year before, but he'd played all 5 of the Kildare League games so far this year. So Jack obviously felt he was an important player for him this year. So he's going to be a loss. Another bit of news here. We don't cover the women's game all that often here on the show. I don't have time, to be honest with you. But the Camogie Association and the LGFA have both voted against a new rule in relation to the dual player. So this obviously is a bit of an issue in that they both set their fixtures out. They're both independent organisations. And if you're a dual player, you can frequently have games doubling up on each other. You know, so like, I mean, seems a little bit unfair on dual players. Maybe there's just no place for dual players in the women's game. But we know the LGFA voted against it, and the Camogie Association at the weekend have also voted against it. So it was only 24% in favour, 76% against. So disappointing, Connor, but not hugely surprising. It doesn't look like, maybe they'll argue, look, fixtures are a difficult enough job at the best of times without having to, you know, do what the GEA do and have to give them all alternative weekends.
Yeah, but just it's ultra disappointing then as well, Willie, when you see that didn't the women's GBA do a survey on like the motion to support the facilitation of the dual player, and I think it had 97% support amongst the members, like 97%, near universal. And then it goes to Congress, having already been rejected by the LGFA, I think back in March, and then the Camogie Association, it only gets 24%.
Yeah,
I was just reading the Marie Hickey, I think she's president of the LGFA, was saying that I think this is back when it was rejected by the LGFA, and saying that the overwhelming feeling was that there was excellent collaboration between the two bodies on dual players. And it's obvious from a load of different cases in recent weeks that doesn't seem to be the case. And I think you're looking at, I was reading this morning, I think you have five Cork players threatening to boycott games. They're down to be played at the Cork Camogie team, the Cork football team, are due to play in the same day next month. And they don't want a week apart. They only want 24 hours apart. And that can't be facilitated. So they're considering a boycott. So listen, we went into it. There's just the collaboration just doesn't seem to be there. And it's the players that are continuing to try to be dual players that are suffering, and if this goes on, they're probably just not going to do that and have to take sides.
Yeah, that's desperate, Conan, really, isn't it? Like, I mean, surely the women's GPA, this is right up their alley for being able to make a stand on this. Whatever about intercounty level, because the dual player doesn't really work at intercounty level, but geez, at club level, surely you should have the option to be able to play for your club in both hurling and in camogie and in football.
Ah, definitely. Like, it's hard at intercounty level. You nearly wouldn't want to see it at intercounty level because, well, obviously you would like to see it, but the way it's gone in the men's game, it's like it's gone so elite that you can't do both, and the women's games are sort of pushing and getting strides to become that level that the men are at. But at club level, like, especially, like, once again, we talk about this all the time, it's always the players in the middle who are losing out from this, and it's always because they have these different organisations that are at loggerheads, and that's including the LGFA with the GA and the LGFA with the Camogie Association. So yet again, it's another story of players not getting what they deserve.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Yellow Slitters, we're going to see this in the hurling this winter. This has been mooted for a while. I have no issues with this at all. I'm not a hurling person. Obviously, there's two different parts of this. Some traditionalists just don't like the yellow ball. They don't like the colour of it, which I think is completely ridiculous. It's probably better under floodlights, especially in the dark evenings. So the traditionalists just don't like the colour of it. There's another issue with it, and this is from Owen Murphy, which is a much more serious issue. He says they're like pucking rocks around. He was tweeting, I'll need 500 hurls now to puck these rocks around. So apparently they're a different weight than the slitters that the lads will be used to. Derek McGrath was on RT Sports saying, I was lucky enough to see a couple of teams training over the last few weeks, and I didn't see one yellow slitter at any of the training sessions. When it was announced yesterday, I was kind of saying to myself that I had been rushed. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of a piloting of it. Not in terms of the research done. I know there's been extensive research done, but in terms of your introduction of it now, 2 or 3 weeks before the championship, I would be on the Derek McGrath line a little bit, Connor, of seems to be rushed in. If teams aren't training with these new balls and they haven't been rolled out to counties, they're not training with the same balls that they're going to be using. Owen Murphy says they're much harder, which isn't ideal. And for me, it does seem to be a little bit rushed.
Well, haven't hurling games been played under lights before with white slitters, and there's been very little complaint. So, like, I don't, if that has been the case, why the need to bring them in? I don't know. Like, I saw Owen Murphy's tweet, and I saw some people were coming back to him saying they're exactly the same, that they're just a different color. Whereas a lot of other people had sympathy with them and were saying that they're completely different. So, if that's the case, and if people as high profile as Owen Murphy and Derek McGrath, who know far more about hurling than I do, are suggesting that this might be a rush decision and probably unnecessary decision, I don't see the need. Like, at first I thought that this was just another example of hurling people being slightly resistant to change, Willie, but it seems as if they've a good motive for not wanting them to be introduced before the championship.
I couldn't find anything on them. All I could find on them, Conan, is that they're the balls that are used in the Fenway Classic, and Owen Murphy would have used those balls. And if he says they're like rocks and he's breaking his hurl, well, then I'd have to believe him. We have Davy Glennon coming up in part two of the show, and he's used them in the Fenway Classic, I'd be 100% sure. And I'm going to ask him what he thinks of the idea. But I don't know why they have to be different in weight or like rocks. Like, why can't the current slitter makers not just dye the leather and have the exact same ball just yellow?
Yeah, like, the only thing I can think is Joe Cannon said the same thing today as well. He was up for interview, and his first thing he said was, "I hope they're not the ones you use in Boston." Now, that's goals only, isn't it? So unless that's just it's heavier for that purpose, you know, and it's just what they use for the Super 11s, and you'd like to think it's identical when it comes over here, just a different color. But I was like you, like, I was wondering what's the problem? It's just a change from white to yellow. But then I read more of Joe Cannon's quotes, and he made a good point. He said, "I've been hurling for 28 years with a white slitter, and now I have 2 weeks to get ready for a championship."
Yeah,
with a yellow slitter. So, like, it is very rushed, as Derek McGrath would say.
Yeah, no, I think that is the strongest argument here, that they're not given any lead in time if they're a different, you know, if they are like rocks and they're a different color. I don't know about the color, lads. Jesus, I don't know. Look, I'm not a hurling person. I'm going to stop talking. I'll ask Cheddar and JJ and Brian and these lads when they come back what their thoughts on it are. Bernard Brogan's been talking about Dublin, lads. He's been doing the rounds on the media with his book. And he's talking about Dublin, and he says this championship is going to pose so many different situations, and that's how Dublin could potentially be caught. And even for him to even suggest Dublin could be caught, I thought was interesting. He says, "I'm sure they're very aware of it, but I would prefer to be in the position of a Laois or a Kildare or a Meath or Westmeath coming in against Dublin than on the Dublin side." I'm not sure about that, Bernard. Like, I mean, I'll take Dublin side any day of the week, being a Laois man. He says, "Because you're going to have nothing to lose. This championship's going to pose so many different situations, and absolutely Dublin could potentially be caught, and I'm sure they're very aware of it." Thought they were interesting quotes, Conan, considering you wouldn't usually hear a Dublin player even mention that they're aware of getting caught. And for Bernard, he has to be doing a Jim Gavin on this, saying that he'd prefer to be in a Laois, Kildare, or Meath position, having nothing to lose, than in the five in a row Dublin defending champions.
They've got nothing to lose. Like, that is true, you know.
And they don't have much more other than that.
That's the one thing that you'd rather have would be with them, but every other advantage is from Dublin. Yeah. I'd rather have the better team, to be honest, and the bigger squad, especially in this COVID hit year. There is more of a chance because the way the season has gone, the Dublin could get caught, but after Leinster, it's not now, and then going straight into a semi-final, so there's only two games, so the chances of them getting caught are slimmer. You know, they have 140 minutes to get caught, and that's it. So it's a very small chance for people to catch Dublin, and it's going to be after Leinster.
Yeah, I see they're playing Meath on Saturday night in Parnell Park, Connor. Like, I mean, that's just kind of slipped under the radar. There's no Croke Park for that league game.
Yeah, I only noticed that this morning, Willie, when you said how much you were looking forward to all the games at the weekend, which I did too. Just going back, like, Bernard Brogan was also kind of elaborating. He was kind of saying that, like, this year being very different, and he was saying, you know, because of COVID, we're going to be out of Croke Park. You know, we might get caught in kind of different grounds down the country. And I was thinking, well, you've been part of a panel that's gone to any amount of different venues throughout Leinster in recent years and still managed to hammer who was coming up against you. So I found that thing about prefer to be in the position of a Laois or a Kildare very strong. Like, each to their own, Bernard. I prefer to be on Dublin side. But like Conan, I think they might get caught, Willie, but it won't be in Leinster. I think whoever, to quote the famous saying, whoever is comes out of Leinster or comes out of Ulster, sorry, will be in the long grass waiting to meet them in the semi-final.
He also came out with the old anecdote, the Paul Galvin anecdote. I'm sure we've talked about this on the show before, Conan. My memory's gone. Where Paul Galvin was over talking to the London footballers and he asked them how many of them owned a bag of balls, and none of them put up their hand. And he says, "You don't own a bag of balls. How are you meant to be high performers?" Did we talk about that in the show before, Conan? Didn't we not?
No.
I actually asked Paul Galvin about it, and I think I ended up taking it out of the interview because he was meeting Wexford that night. Anyways, maybe that's why it's kind of in my mind. But this was it. That obviously makes an awful lot of sense. And like, I mean, usually the only players on a Gaelic football team that will have the ball of bags in the boot is the free taker. Like, I mean, we all kick the ball. I know a lot less in the last 10 years, but at least that's coming back into it. But the idea, usually, for the majority, I would say 2/3 of the squad, is training on your own, is doing a 5K run or running up a hill or doing some gym session. Training on your own never seems to equate to kicking pints on your own or, you know, doing some ball work skills on your own. We had Keane Johnson, for example, talking about kicking the ball up against the gable end of the house to practice his bad foot. But he's a free taker and a finisher. He falls into that first category. The majority of the team does not do their own training with the ball.
It is amazing. Like, you could probably ask 99% of people listening the ratio of runs to kicking a ball or the ratio of squats to kicking a ball that they do, and yeah, to be honest with themselves, it's hugely imbalanced. And I'm the exact same. It's handier to go out and do a run, but like, it's funny when you think about, say, the gym. Like, you're paying gym membership and you're going in there and you're racking up a squat, and rather than just going down to the pitch and doing something that you love doing, it's strange. No, it is dear. They own balls. I've got one. It's 50 quid. You can get them off the club, but if the free taker's hogging them, then it's hard to call rank if you're a wing forward who doesn't kick the balls during a match anyway. So, yeah, like, it's definitely something that people need to look at more. So I've spoke to Brian Fenton about it there a few weeks ago, and he said people always take for granted, like, the basics. You're never too good to be practicing the basics of our game. And that's, he said, people are always surprised. It's all sort of like the Jim McGuinness training session there. When he comes in to take an underage team, he said people almost look disappointed that he doesn't have a big box of magic tricks to show them or any sort of pairs of wisdom, really. It's just like, no, let's just practice the basics here. And everyone's sort of shocked that it's so simple.
Yeah, no, and even on that point, Connor, like, I mean, one of the main things I remember when James Horan took over Mayo in 2011 was hand passing off the left hand, off your bad hand, kicking off your bad foot, kind of went back to a lot of basics of the game that senior footballers, even at club level, never mind inter-county level, are expected to have perfected, but they haven't. They've been bluffing and getting away with it for a long time.
Yeah, very much. And you could, to be honest, you could notice a difference in a lot of Mayo players that the skill level came on. I'm thinking of like Colin Boyle, for example, who would have started scoring points from his left foot from 45 yards. Lee Keegan, the same thing, you know, having worked on meticulously on these skills for a long time. And the same thing as Colin said there. Like, I am during lockdown, I think when we were allowed back on the pitch, I got two balls from our manager. It was the first time I've ever had an O'Neill's balls in possession in my house. You know, it never occurred to me before that to kind of, you know, have a bag of balls in my possession that I could go down and kick a few points or just practice my skills, whatever. And on Bernard Brogan, like, he does mention that a lot in the book. Like, his dad bought him a bag of balls as a birthday or a Christmas present, because you're like, a 10 balls from O'Neill's are probably like, that'd be like 500 quid or something like that. And then after he got the balls, he did a lot of kicking, you know, either on his own. He said that Paul Finn used to do it regularly with a couple of Dublin coaches, and you could see the difference in Paul Finn as well. So, you know, people tend to take these things for granted, whereas, you know, it seems to be it's probably no surprise that the better footballers are the ones who have worked, you know, meticulously on their skills, even though their talent is probably greater than, and, you know, the vast majority of players to start with.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a case for that. And maybe, you know, like, I mean, getting your bag of balls and honing your technique, having it exactly right, especially when you see rugby players and you see golfers and you see anyone else in any other sport in the world that, you know, deals with striking a ball, how much thought they put in it, where I've went through my whole career of just doing it, not really ever honing a technique. I'd have to think about it when I moved over onto my left, and, you know, I thought about that and I saw a rapid improvement just from thinking about it and practicing it. And I don't think that's done enough in the GAA. Maybe it's changing, Conan, but definitely throughout my whole career, you just learn your own way of doing it. It might not be exactly right, but look, you make it work for you. You might, you know, you might not be the best point kicker in the world, but you're bloody good on the turn, and you're, you know, you're fast and etc. And it's almost like it's taken, right, he's not that good at that, rather than saying, how can we get him better at that?
Yeah, yeah. You don't do that. You're not that sort of player. Yeah,
we'll put you as a working wing forward. You just can't kick scores. Forget about it.
But I did find myself during the year there, like, down kicking the ball and asking Stephen Smith, who plays of us, like, how's he kicking it? And then he's giving me advice, but I'm starting to change the way I kick, like, all these years later. So it is insane. Like, what you're saying there is right. Find a way that works for you, but you need to be, it needs to be repetition, like doing it over and over and over again. You can't be trying it every few months and then trying a new way of kicking and hoping that'll work for the next game. Like, take it from me, it doesn't work.
Right, lads, we'll be back with Davy Glennon.
After the match with with Marty Morrissey and the Marty squad, and you know, the big thing for me yesterday with Clare versus Galway was,
hang on, did you ask permission to do the Marty squad there?
I didn't, but I was only a special guest. Last Thursday you asked me the same question when I started Bubbles, and I said yes to the Marty squad, because yes, I would have started Bubbles for that game yesterday. That was the first I heard of Johnny King coming back with the Galway squad. You know, I was asked just in the Marty squad.
Here, Damien, are you getting paid for Marty squad plugs on our show here?
That's three.
Wait, no, I do that completely voluntarily. Yeah.
He hits it. It's over the bar. Oh, holy Moses! What a match!
Move away from the messing there, lads. Right, we have a serious show to do here. Right?
All right, so the news broke over the weekend that Davy Glennon has declared himself for the Westmeath Hurlers, and he joins us on the line now. How's it going, Davy?
Good now, Colm, good now. And you?
Not too bad. This came as a bit of a shock. You're changing the maroon for another maroon team.
Yeah, I've seen a headline that changing counties but not the colour, and I suppose it's right in a way. It came, I suppose, fast to me as well. It was something that kind of came about going back a little bit earlier this year. So an opportunity came about, and I suppose me finishing up with Galway in early February gave me a chance, I suppose, to see, well, what can I do with my inter-county career being over with Galway, basically. So this opportunity came, and why not take it while I'm still fit and fresh and feeling good, you know.
Well, exactly, that's it. So Noel Larkin is in with Westmeath, and you obviously worked with him. He was in Micheál Donoghue's backroom team, and Alan Cairns is in there as well. I presume it was one of those two lads that approached you.
To be honest, it wasn't really at all, because I think Noel is only in Westmeath in the last couple of weeks, months initially as well. So look, I suppose I was with Galway until I was let go in early February, and you know, I thought, I suppose, with like every manager, I suppose, has different ideas, as I quoted, and different players, I suppose, to think differently of different players. And I obviously met with Shane O'Neill after being dropped again a few weeks later, and basically asked the question, was my inter-county career under Shane O'Neill over? And I was told it wasn't. And taking that on board, I knew that we had club championship coming up, and that was going to start before the inter-county. And I had a chance to show what I could do, and I asked the questions, I suppose, what was I weak on, or what did I need to improve on as a player, and I went about and did what I was, I suppose, told I needed to work on.
What was that as a matter of interest? What feedback did you get?
I got my feedback that my physical my explosive pace wasn't good enough. And that was basically the most that I got out of it, and the feedback that I got, that I needed to improve my explosive pace. So I worked on that, and I got a little bit of one-on-one with an S&C myself behind the scenes, and I hurled away at my club and trained as best I could. And, you know, it was either going to go one way or another, I suppose. It was either going to go where I'd throw the ties out of the pram and sulk, or I was going to basically go take the approach of maybe taking on board what I needed to do, feedback, and try and improve as best I could. And if it was going to be and was good enough, well and good. And if it wasn't, I couldn't say, well, I didn't try, you know. And
right.
Well, with the club scene coming on, I thought, well, you're in the shop window again, you're in the shop front. So let's see where it takes you. And I suppose if your form was good enough and you were hurling well enough and you were leading for your club, which I basically expect every inter-county player would be the leader in their club and to be standing out. And if I wasn't doing that, well and good. But if I was, I was obviously going to be disappointed if I wasn't going to get a look in again. And taking not like a long story short, I suppose the club scene. My club, we got to the Premier League quarter final, and I thought I was hurling as good as I could at that given time, and I was showing a bit of form, and I was in good form. I felt I was fit, and I hadn't improved on what I needed to improve on, but obviously that wasn't just good enough, and I suppose you have to maybe take time and step back and see, well, what's the best approach that I can and that can be there for me going forward, and this obviously came about.
Yeah, so like, I mean, so this opportunity for Westmeath came about earlier in the year, like you've explained, but you kind of put it on the long arm, hoping you would play yourself back into form. That hasn't happened, and now the Westmeath thing is kind of open again. You're only 29, and like you say, you're in good form. I'm not sure why this doesn't happen more often, Davey, because often in counties when this happens to a hurler or footballer, they kind of just have to hang up the boots at a young age. Like, at least you're saying, look, I'm not finished yet. There is another option.
Totally agree, and I know club players around Galway County that maybe aren't good enough at a particular time, or a manager has a different idea. It's, I suppose, Micheál Donoghue, All-Ireland winning manager, had a different idea about me than maybe Shane O'Neill has, and that's understandable, and you just have to accept that and take it on the chin, whether you agree with that or not. But that's sport, so that's the GAA, and that's the good of the GAA. So look, I suppose have to take it on the chin whether I like it or not. This opportunity has come, and I'm willing to take it, and I feel at 29 I've lots to play for. I suppose I have to work hard, obviously, to try and get into a Westmeath team, which is very impressive, the little bit I saw of trainings and club games so far. The club final was on there last Sunday week, and it was very impressive. We went to a extra time, and there was some massive hurling in it. And I suppose one of the big things I got from having a look at things in Westmeath, that honestly is a big thing. And I suppose people think, like, or look at Westmeath as a lesser county than Galway, but honesty is a big thing with me. And I suppose if you can give us as honest as you can in life, whether it's work or sport, or that, you'll go a long way. And I think there is an honest bunch there, and I think there's bigger things to happen over the coming years if lads obviously stick together.
Yeah. Have you thought about how you're going to approach it mentally? You know, like, I mean, you obviously play for Galway and you're representing your people and your family and, you know, your county and yourself. Whereas you move to Westmeath, you know, you're not really representing the people of Westmeath as much. You know, you wouldn't have that connection with them. You'd be more probably playing for yourself, you know, and your teammates.
Yeah, that's a challenge. I suppose there's lots of challenges out there, and I'm willing to take that challenge, and I've thought about that. I suppose when things broke there during the week, if every sort of comments, and if you stay reading comments, it could bring you down, and 90% of it, you know yourself, of social media is great, but there's 10% that's not as good, and there's often, like, you're going to get comments that aren't very nice. But I have thought about that. And look, as I said, I have to close one book and open another, and that's what I'm just going to have to deal with. And basically, I have been very welcomed by players, management, backroom so far, and I can't say other than anything good, and I'm willing to put my neck in the line, I suppose, for whatever team, whatever jersey that I put on. I'm going to go out and give it 110% any day that I can. And I look, I suppose, with being able to, there's lots of people, there's lots of circumstances out there with families that you mightn't get the opportunity or mightn't be able to, or injuries. But I'm going to tell you, one of the luckier ones that have been healthy enough, injury-free, mentally and physically, been able to go out and grace the between the white lines again.
Yeah. So your mother qualifies you to play for Westmeath, am I right?
Yeah, that's the provincial rule, yeah.
Right. Okay. And Annie, I've seen some kind of conflicting reports online. I would actually put 90% and the 10%. I would nearly go 50-50 online at this stage, Davey. But like, I mean, is there any talk? I've seen.
I haven't read any of them. I just don't look at them.
Yeah, you're better off. And have you? Is the transfer going to go through, or where is it at? Because I've seen people say that it won't and that it will.
Yeah, look, as you said, you've seen people saying it will and it won't. Everyone has their own opinion, but like, it depends on the opinion you take. It's like people say that I was useless and I wasn't good enough for Galway, and I was only coming out of the sub and I was only on the bench. And I suppose, look, there's lots of players that come off benches. You look at Maurice Shannon when he was with Waterford. He wasn't the first team starter, but it's a panel, and it's what you're doing inside the panel, pushing lads on, I suppose, in training, that are looking at you behind them, making them better. And I suppose people don't understand that either, but look, at majority of people will, that understand sport and understand GAA as well. Like, so opinions, people have opinions and they're entitled to their opinion.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, fair play to you for doing it. Like, there's no doubt, I know players in Laois, like at one or two, I remember even when Mick O'Dwyer was around and he didn't fancy them and they had to sit out 4 years and then they were back in when he left. So like, I mean, it definitely is something that players should think about if they fall out of, you know, favour. Is there somewhere where I can continue playing?
Well, if you qualify under the regulations to basically play with someone else, yeah, fair and well and good. And at 29, I haven't that many. Like, it's younger and younger is getting as far as I can see with intercounty players. Like, at 30, you're moving on. You're getting old now compared to before. And I suppose me at 29, looking, going, I'm 30 next year. Am I going to be better? Well, I was in the shop window at the start of this year, and it just wasn't good enough for that particular management. So I kind of have to look at myself and look, well, what do I do now? And that's kind of what I was looking at. And the fear of not being able to play at the highest level anymore was on the back of my mind. And it's something that I just had to basically make up my mind and go for it. And secondly, I feel, I suppose, going back years back, I suppose, I've often come out with, like, interviews on my gambling situation years gone by, where I felt that I wasted an awful lot of my years at Intercounty with what was holding me back in terms of my gambling situation. And I feel, being physically and mentally, being in a very good state of mind now, that why not stay playing as long as I can? And that's basically the line I took.
Yeah, and I suppose obviously playing helps with that mental and physical, you know, fitness.
Absolutely, that's the big thing as well. Like, I've been hurling, I suppose, playing GAA intercounty with Galway minor under-21 and senior since 2008. I played my first minor Galway game up to the start of February 2020, and I've been involved year on year, and it's a massive change for any player, not just me. There's lots of players that it takes, you know, literally that's half your life, your life gone, where you've been so caught up in GAA and caught up that you have this basically life to fill again, or what do you do? What do you take up? What's your hobbies? And me, with the difficulties that I had, I needed probably something to to fill that gap. And there is fear that what do you do? You've lots of time in your hands. So it was something that I suppose is going to help me long term, and I felt I had to take it, and it was good for me as well to keep me on the straight and narrow as well, you know.
Yeah, I think no, that's definitely important. And like, I mean, you're in the pub trade. You have a pub in Loughrea, is that right? So I presume you've gone through a very, very difficult 6 months.
Yeah, that too. I opened late last year a bar in Loughrea. And I suppose in the 15th of March, we had to close because of COVID. And knowing when we could open was very difficult. And like everything was left at a standstill, and which was very difficult for everyone, not just the pub trade. Everyone was being affected by it. So I basically actually set up a takeaway coffee dock in the front of my building, in my bar, which took off, and I was able to do takeaway coffees, which is now still open. So that's working out well for me so far. And I suppose one positive thing that I took out of COVID was that I was able to sit back and think about something different in my business. And now this is a separate business to the bar, which is going great. So that's probably one positive thing that has came out of COVID for me. But yeah, it's difficult. We opened again there for 2 weeks. And things were going as well as they could, and obviously with restrictions again, I had to close the business because I don't have an outdoor area to seat 15 people to serve alcohol. So it is there is ups and downs, but I suppose that's the challenges of life. So look, we're just taking day by day and seeing how everything pans out.
Yeah, and all the time through that lockdown and the business wasn't open, were you having to pay rent, or was at least did you get some sort of a freeze on that?
No, there was a freeze on that. Look, landlords and that were very good. They understood that, obviously, places were closed for a reason, and it was out of our hands, essentially. It wasn't, you know, because of a person or a tenant. So I was happy enough that everything was working out in my favour that way as well, that I wasn't having to pay money for something that I wasn't actually making money on, you know.
Yeah. Oh, well, that is what, yeah.
But it was difficult, I suppose, with the lockdown as well. You're sitting at home, and I'd be a type of person that would be, you know, active or going. I wouldn't be one to sit down and watch films or that. So it was difficult to basically be indoors all the time or being confined to a certain area. And obviously with the gambling as well, it does take its toll. You're basically on your phone. If you're on social media, there's every sort of an advert coming up. You know, you have to try and adapt, and it's a different way of life there for the last couple of months as well. So that's a challenge in itself as well. But thank God, so far so good, and it's only a day at a time in that kind of a game as well. You're only one step away, or one bet away, or one drink away from going back to where you were. So that's something that I have to be conscious about as well, and look after myself.
Yeah, well, fair play to you for being able to look after yourself. Because like you said, I saw an interview of yours in May, I think it was, and you were saying you're vulnerable all the time. And especially, like you say, when you're sitting at home, nothing to do. And then you're thinking of the business and how you could potentially make a few quid.
Yeah, and I was just looking the other day. I think with this bank holiday coming up, we've lost out in 6 bank holidays in the pub trade. Paddy's Day. Easter was in there as well, so like financially it wasn't good, and I suppose in my first year of business as well in the bar, after like, you know, doing the place up and putting a nice bit of money into the business, it probably wasn't ideal. But look, everyone's in the same boat, I suppose, and you just have to move on and get on with it and look at the positive side of things. And obviously, as I said, one positive thing that came out of COVID for me was that I was able to see a different side to business and adapt. And that's the big thing. And I suppose thinking outside the box is a big part of it as well. And whether it was in sport with thinking outside the box, having to move on, or in the business side of things. So look, so far so good. So we'll just have to keep going and keep trying and seeing where it brings us.
No, you definitely have a very positive attitude about it anyways, Davey, I have to say.
Well, you kind of have to. You know, so look, we'll see. We'll see how it goes. The pressure's on now, though. The pressure's on to deliver with Westmead. But, yeah, it'll be all good. The challenge is there, so we just have to take it on board.
Yeah, and the positive thing, you won't have to throw out all your togs and socks either. They'll all work.
Well, there's crests as well. The crest off.
Oh, right. Oh, yeah, only your socks will work then. There's hardly a crest on the socks, is there?
No, there's no crest on the socks. But look, at hopefully I'll be able to wear some of the gear anyway.
Any slagging from the Galway boys?
Nothing yet anyway. I think it's maybe it's a thing that is too early yet to go slagging about, but I'm sure I'll get a few digs, whether it is on the field. I was just actually saying to someone the other day there that my debut for Galway was in 2012 against Westmeath, and I was taken off after, I think Anthony Cunningham took me off after 40 minutes. I was cat the same day, but maybe if it's after the year, next year, I think the first round of the league maybe against Galway, so my debut for Westmeath will be against Galway, so that'll be something interesting, won't it?
Jesus, I have to say, it will be interesting, but you did well to be cat in 40 minutes. How cat can you be in 14 bloody minutes?
Very, very. When you're in corner forward and it's like tennis, it's going in and it's coming out as fast. The curly fingers on the way, so it was. So that wasn't, I suppose, something, a good memory, but I was actually down in Westmeath at the county final, and I was looking at the position I was in that day. I don't think I'd been back there since, and it was cringy to look at, to be honest.
Right. Come here, before you go, Before you go, we were talking on the show about these yellow slitters, and the three of us are football people, so I want to get your thoughts on it there. What, like, did you play with them in the Fenway Classic? I presume you went over there a couple of years.
I did, yeah, in Boston. That was kind of different, though, because it was something, it was different. There was different rules, and it was basically, it wasn't a, you know, it was just a temporary thing with the yellow slitter out there, but coming into the championship in Ireland is something, it's a strange one, and obviously there's going to be lots of opinions on it, but I don't think I'd be in favour of the yellow slitter. I suppose traditionally our slitter is white and black rims, and that's the way you kind of like to keep it, but yeah, I suppose it's different. You look at the plastic hurdle now as well, people are using, so everyone has a different opinion, and maybe with the change in the time of championship this year being basically darker in the evenings, and I suppose getting darker at 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the evening now, and teams having to train later, and lights mightn't be as good as other lights, maybe that's a good thing. So it may work, but I wouldn't like to see it going compulsory. I think next year, maybe when things may hopefully get back to normality or some kind of normality again, that things will go back. But I would be in favour of the normal slitter and keeping the same as what it was.
Right, it's a little bit strange. Yeah, no, that's the colour of it. Owen Murphy said that they're like rocks. Is there a difference in the weight of them? Or, you know, actual.
There is. Like out there, there was. Yeah, because you get different. Like I think it's a certain slitter that we have to use. We're in the normal slitter, you could be using different types or style of slitter makes. There's different makers out there, but they are like rocks. Like I suppose your hurl. I've seen a lot of the lads were cracking their hurdles with the slitter.
Right.
But I don't know what type of or who's going to make in the slitters. But yeah, I suppose everyone has a different opinion on them. And we'll have to wait and see. It's something different, I suppose.
Yeah.
But, look, isn't it good to be able to go out there and hurl again, I suppose, with everything that's going on. So you'll take the yellow slitter to be able to tug out and perform the way things have gone on in the world.
Yeah, no, you definitely will. Come here, Davey. I've kept you long enough. Thanks very much for taking the call.
Thank you. Best of luck.
All right, great stuff from Davey there. Right, we'll be back on Thursday. We're going to have a football show this Thursday. Football starting at the weekend. We'll be back with the hurling show then starting the following week. All the pundits are back. Keane Ward is back next Monday, which is some good news for everybody. And we'll talk to you all on Thursday. Good luck.
And when I started running, I suppose I didn't stop. And when I got the chance to go, I said I should go, and so it opened up.
We were only the small little fish out there, so we are, and we're trying hard to make it through. But it's hard to get the breaks when you're the smaller fish.
Because I love this county so much, you know. And it's just, I'm delighted that the lads did it for the people of Waterford today, because, like, I'm heartbroken. I let it go, because I never see you later, but not a lot of time.